All right, we're back with Jennifer Lopez, Good, Bad, Crazy, Part 3. I'm Brian.
I'm Sean.
And we are going to be talking about one of the most profitable films of all time.
I mean, yes, I suppose.
Well, isn't it? Okay, this film, if you have not seen The Boy Next Door, what are you waiting for? Am I right, Sean? I sort of foisted this film upon you.
Yeah, but it didn't take much arm-twisting or overpowering, did it really now, darling?
It didn't take much arm-twisting or overpowering for Jennifer Lopez to go next door and get what she deserved from the boy, either.
Yeah.
So, this movie...
It's great!
It is quintessential of so many things. First of all, it's the quintessential guilty pleasure, right? This movie is not good. It is laughably bad.
It is absolute trash.
It is over the top in so many ways, and yet, I'm sure you could design 17,000 drinking games. You could quote the lines ad nauseum in any sort of gay bar for the rest of your life. It also, to me, is the quintessential January cinema release. Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
What do I mean by that?
Well, a January cinema release is, well, you gotta fill the cinema with something. I mean, Christmas movies have all come and gone.
Everybody's seen The Danish Girl and they didn't really like it.
Everybody saw Star Wars and they can't see it again.
Right, and so out come these movies that are sort of throwaway films that nobody really expects all that much of. And yet, there are a certain kind of movie that if made for not very much money, targeted in a certain way, can become surprising hits. The Boy Next Door is a quintessential example of that. The movie that came out at the right time was made in the right way, and it's just more testament to how executive producer Jennifer Lopez has got her eye on the ball.
I think this film should be a case study for production students.
Tell us more.
Well, the reason why it was such a hit was because, you know, they had a star who was obviously invested in it. That's what kind of made it special. She was executive producer. But also because of its targeted demographic and marketing campaign.
It kind of is this movie that hits a bunch of buttons. I mean, you, Sean, have often bemoaned the fact that we don't get any erotic thrillers anymore.
True.
You know, you are a lover of Basic Instinct and Body of Evidence and God knows what else from the kind of heyday of the erotic thriller. In many ways, that is what The Boy Next Door is. From the opening credits, the kind of faux Jerry Goldsmith style score is telling us, be afraid, be very afraid.
Super sinister.
So that even when it's this like suburban mom, like high school thing, there's always this like undercurrent of like timpani drums and like stirring Bernard Herrmann-esque strings that are telling us, no, no, no. This
not all is as it seems.
Clarice. So basically, I think the movie succeeds because it's giving you violence and menace. It's also giving you skin. Skin and sweat and fluids and...
Yeah.
My God.
It's also giving you Kristen Chenoweth enjoying every line, every scrap of dialogue she's given.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Award winner Kristen Chenoweth has not had many screen roles, but she was born to play the slutty, over-the-top vice principal best friend.
She is not slutty
they
in the slightest.
They keep saying she's a little bit slutty because she like keeps making like ribald double entendres to
Jennifer
Lopez.
And she has
Lopez.
One of those, you know that haircut where it's like... bleach blonde with kind of like a little ratty bit down the front. I love those.
She kind of seems to be playing a character that Kate McKinnon would play on Saturday Night Live. So to a theater-going audience, like Kristen Chenoweth is like an adorable ingenue, but like on film, she is honestly like an over-the-top gargoyle.
Oh, yeah.
Like it just is like if you ever need a case study in the difference between stage acting and film acting, watch The Boy Next Door.
And if you ever want an actress who's brave enough to go into direct light you know, harsh, direct, chemical lighting, Kristen Chenoweth will do it.
She's really good in this film, though.
No, she's great. Everybody in this film is great.
Yeah, it's perfectly cast. Can we just...
So, it's what is the film about?
What is it about? It's basically Fatal Attraction, am I right?
Yeah.
A gender-reversed Fatal Attraction.
With a slight age difference as well.
The movie begins with executive producer and star Jennifer Lopez jogging through the opening title credit sequence. And what is going on psychologically in the life of her and her family?
Well, she's pondering the situations that have got her to that place. The kicking out of her husband because of his cheating with some... woman.
A secretary.
A sex-secretary in San Francisco.
Yes, and her husband is played by Aiden from Sex and the City.
Yeah, John Corbett.
Yeah.
She is a mother to a sensitive kid with allergies.
Yes, yes, in fact, at one point, Jennifer Lopez has to utter the immortal line, "Yeah, well, I'm sending him to the doctor next week. She's the best allergist in the valley." Like, I feel like this role was written with a kind of Reese Witherspoon-type actress in mind as a sort of, like, suburban California mom, and seeing, like, super hot Jennifer Lopez in this role is kind of amazing.
No, you know what this was? This was a serious traumatic role for Jenny McCarthy.
And they would have been like a speech about like how we shouldn't vaccinate because it might cause autism. Like that would have been inserted somewhere in the middle of it.
Oh, then she wouldn't be taking him to that allergist in the valley.
No, no, or getting the EpiPen. So basically, she's the mom of a kid who's sensitive and twinky and a bit scrawny and has like a problem with allergies.
She's a dedicated teacher of the classics.
Of, not just literature, but of the classics. She is an expert in The Iliad by Homer. Yeah, you've heard of Homer, haven't you, Sean?
Yeah, because you know the writer didn't care to Google any other classical text. I don't even think they mentioned the flipping Odyssey at any point. It's no, just The Iliad.
But can I say, this is the reason why, because obviously The Odyssey is a far more feminine, humane story. The Iliad is the story of toxic masculinity run amok, Agamemnon, Achilles, vengeance, violence, and that is what the boy himself, the titular boy next door, represents.
Yeah, so long story short, because this is getting very long, is Jennifer Lopez is a wife and mother who is kind of like, oh, my life could be better, okay?
And Kristen Chenoweth is feeding her like, you've got to get those divorce papers signed now. He fucking cheated on you.
He cheated on you and he said she smelled like cookies, which is not something you say to a friend.
Yeah, is that really what that smells like? Chocolate chip cookies?
What?
The woman's genitalia.
I don't think he was talking about her bits, darling. I think he was talking about her in general. No, listen, vaginas do not smell like chocolate chip cookies.
Well, what? She was wearing perfume that smelled like a chocolate chip
Her whole body. Like, I mean, if I put cocoa butter all over me now, okay?
You'd smell like cocoa butter.
Yeah, which is halfway to chocolate chip cookies. Okay?
Okay.
Use your head now, darling. You're not a rose color for nothing.
Carry on.
So... she is trying to get to this allergist in the valley, but, you know, the gosh darn garage door just won't open.
And all it takes is a hunky guy with some biceps to, like, pop in and say, hey, let me fix that for you.
Yeah, so this neighbor boy is living with Cheech Marin next door, who's his uncle, who is having an operation and will be away from the house for some time. How convenient. This guy is sexy. J-Lo has stirrings in any part of her that can twitch.
How old is the boy next door? Noah.
Okay, Noah, thank you very much. He has a name. So it's very quickly established that Noah is not underage. Very important to
the plot.
He is,
quote, almost 20.
Almost 20, okay? And I'm like, why is he still in high school? I don't get this part.
And like, why does he have a fitness model's abs?
Okay, yeah, I mean, I know these youngsters these days are jacked, okay? But like... okay, I guess he's like 4 or 5 years older than the kid, than her son. But like, oh my god, it's like his body mass is like triple the density. His voice is like 3 times as deep. And I'm sure his cock is like, you know, at least 4 inches longer.
I feel like he's probably overcompensating for a lack in that department.
That's a very fair point. He's too cocky and ripped to have a big dick, I think.
Can I say also, so not only is J-Lo's heart going aflutter when Noah shows up to like fix the garage door, but instantaneously Twinkie's son, whatever his name is, Kevin? Is it Kevin?
Why not? It is Kevin, actually. I remember the Home Alone reference that I'm making during this.
So Kevin is instantaneously drawn like a magnet to this cool boy next door, and Jane was like, oh great, why don't you both go off to the hardware store to like get the piece that will be needed to fix the garage door? And I was saying to myself, this is like the beginning of our Cocky Boys film, like in HD. Like, it really is. It's like you've got the big one who's like the master of the way of the world, like ready to fix the car, and then like the little doe being led to the slaughter. So they begin a relationship where nerdy kid Kevin is being like mentored and kind of looked after by literally the sexiest boy who's
in the tri-state area.
Then of course, conveniently, John Corbett, soon to be ex-hubby, decides to take the kid away for a Labor Day fishing trip to Mammoth Lake, leaving J-Lo with a mammoth opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. So then he, the boy next door, Noah, calls her. I'm like, how does he have her phone number? And also, he's only next door.
Well, he calls her, although the night before, she's done a little bit of reconnaissance, if memory serves.
Oh,
She's looked out the window.
And she saw him, like, you know, looking at his own cock in the mirror. You know how it is.
Well, you never got to see any cock, but you do get to see quite a few inches of waxed butt cheek.
Yeah, you do. I mean, Brian is insistent they're waxed. I just think he might not be that hairy.
J-Lo is, of course, conveniently dressed in a silky chemise with a slit up the side, because that's just how suburban, you know, classics teachers, you know, wander around their McMansions.
Hey, you know, I wear pretty, you know, lacy things around this house.
While you're thumbing through Homer. So there
whoever he is.
So she's seen the butt, she's gotten the phone call, and he has that classic pickup line. You know the one. Oh, sorry, I was trying to defrost this chicken, but it didn't work. Can you come over and bail me out? I'm gonna use that on my next grinder foray. What do you think?
Oh, infidel. How could you, Ryan?
Everybody loves a chicken. So anyway, so she goes over to salvage his roast chicken. It all goes downhill from there.
Sorry, I couldn't salvage it more, but
you
the damage
fine.
Was done.
Yeah. I'm glad I had you next door.
What?
Dad, you're beautiful. You know that?
Oh, no, I'm...
Amazing. Sweet. Natural. No. Sexy. So sexy.
Noah.
While this movie perhaps has a lot of reactionary anti-feminist elements, I'm sure, in terms of the sex that gets offered to Jennifer Lopez in this sequence, I mean, he may be a sociopath, indeed a psychopath, but he knows how to pleasure a woman.
Yeah,
am I right?
For sure.
Yeah?
For sure. I'm always delighted when there is any scene of a man going down on a woman in a film.
You know, it's possible, it's entirely possible that during a break at the craft services table while filming Monster in Law, Jane Fonda said to J-Lo, you know, I got John Voight to eat me out in Coming Home. You really need to do that in whatever your next film is. What
That's
do you
a
think?
Very fair point. Yeah, this all comes, it all links together, doesn't it? I thought you were going to talk about the craft services table on the boy next door, which J-Lo herself said they just didn't have the money for. J-Lo had to make sandwiches every day and bring them to the set.
Do you want to give any more description of what happened sexually between them? Because you were quite impressed by this whole sequence.
Well, you get to see J-Lo's boobs, but of course, it being a movie, you don't get to see any nipple. So his hands are covering her gorgeous boobs.
And sort of massaging
him. Yeah, while he works his way into her pelvically. She falls asleep, okay? She wakes up the next morning. Brian was like, oh my god, it's probably the first day of school. And I was like, oh please, let it be the first day of school.
It was actually Labor Day.
Yeah,
I think it was Labor Day. Yeah. So it was a day off. But she is like, obviously, instantly regretting it.
He shows up with breakfast, and I'm like, stay there! He's brought you breakfast! He's obviously a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly not obviously a good guy, as the musical score is telling us.
Oh yeah, when you have a sex scene that's orchestrated by the most menacing keyboards, you know you're in for trouble.
We also failed to say that while he is staying with his Vietnam veteran uncle who's having the organ transplant, the reason is because his own parents died, mysteriously in a car accident outside of San Bernardino. We'll return to that. So, as soon as J-Lo has had sex with a 19-year-old boy, not a minor, it has to be said, just barely legal, although the actor himself is probably pushing 30.
Age.
Yeah. She's like, I'm sorry, Noah. This was wrong. It was all my fault. It's not your fault. I'm the adult. I take responsibility for this. Let's just forget it ever happened. But as we all know, there's no way that this is going to be forgotten. And in fact, who pops up in her literature class quoting from Homer's Iliad the very next day?
So it turns out that he is a senior transfer student to the school, and that she... What's her name again?
Her name is Claire Peterson.
That's it.
She, Mrs. Peterson.
She, Mrs. Peterson, authorized the transfer of this student. How does she know? Because the principal who introduces the young man to her class takes out a printed copy of the email that she sent, because everybody does that with emails.
Of course, Wiley Noah has actually hacked into Claire's email account to, begin the first in a multi-part stage of stalking her to win her back over. So can we whiz through, please, Sean, some of the highlights or lowlights, however you plan to define them, of the, like, outrageous scenes and escapades and lines that occur in the middle part of this film?
Okay, so when Kevin and John Corbett get back and they remark, and the weather is remarked upon in the area, they say, did you not get caught up in the storm that, you know, happened up there? They're like, no, it was dry as a bone. To which Noah replies, oh, it got pretty wet down here. Which I just live for, you know?
Well, you know, I'll walk out with you, Noah. Yeah, come on. Do you want to take a cookie for the road?
Love your mother's cookies.
They're great, right?
He keeps finding ways to be in their house, conveniently semi-disrobed in the window, driving Kevin to and from school, to and from a shooting range where he conveniently shows his amazing accurate ability with a pistol, and also starts planting into Kevin's brain the idea that Kevin's cuck dad, John Corbett, is a loser and a terrible influence on Mama Peterson, right? So he's turning the kid against dad. He's keeps trying to worm and insinuate his way back into Claire's panties, and she's having nothing to do with it. It kind of starts to get out of control, doesn't it? There's a violent incident in the school hallway.
Noah, knowing that there was a bunch of loser bullies who upset Kevin, sees Kevin try and stand up for himself one day, only to intervene and basically pulverize the skull of this, you know, ringleader of the biker, of the skateboard bullies.
Which causes Vice Principal Kristen Chenoweth to intervene, and
she gets pushed.
Which she also finally looks into mysterious sexy boy Noah's transfer files and realizes that he has poor impulse control and was kicked out of school in San Bernardino. Which apparently, like, these records were conveniently misplaced for a few weeks at school.
That's none of your business. It is my business. I'm a vice principal.
You fractured Jason Zimmer's skull.
It's inconceivable what you've done.
I really want Kristen Chenoweth and Wallace Shawn to star in a revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, but that's another story.
Oh my god.
So anyway, basically, sociopathic Noah starts going on the rampage. He really, really ruins the fall fling, doesn't he? I mean, those kids just want to have a nice, you know, autumn dance. There's Mrs. Peterson as the chaperone. She sees some dripping water in the bathroom. She goes in and finds a clogged drain.
Full of hair, isn't it?
Full of hair.
So whose hair is that, by the way?
I don't know. Some mysterious hair that he got from somewhere.
His pubic hair.
He's got the entire sink overflowing, and then he's scrawled in, like, black graffiti, I fucked Claire Peterson. And at this point, J-Lo is still, she's still not ready to, like, come clean about the situation to anyone.
I don't know what's going on here.
Well, she's also like, it's your word against mine, Noah. You know, no one's going to believe you. But then, of course, he has photographic evidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay, she opens her classroom one day to find that it is slathered. It is covered.
It's like bunting.
Yeah, it's bunting. It's like paper chains of porn all over.
Because, of course, he's secretly filmed the hot night of passion that they had. And so she has to, you know, try and rip down all of these photocopied images of their coitus.
Yeah. It is literally, can I just say, it is literally everywhere in the room, okay? It is hanging on string across the room. It is on the floor. It is on the walls. Okay, I cannot say that enough. It is everywhere in the room.
And meanwhile, her entire class is, like, clamoring outside to read a few Homeric epithets, and they're like, Miss Peterson, why can't we get into the classroom? But she's, like, taking them all down, and then somehow miraculously stuffs them into the drawers of her desk before the principal comes in and says, Claire, you've been acting a bit strangely recently. We're all a bit worried. Does it have something to do with this Noah kid? And she's like, oh, it's fine, it's fine.
And literally, there's no paper in the room at this point.
So finally, at this point, she realizes, okay, he's got video evidence of this. He's hell-bent on destroying my life. I might as well bring one ally into this situation. And that ally is, of course, her best friend,
Kristen Chenoweth,
the vice principal.
Oh, Claire. Okay. Why didn't you tell me?
I thought that I could handle it. I thought that it was gonna just blow over. I don't know. I didn't think he was gonna turn into a stalker.
Okay. Look, we can look at this picture and we know that he's a psychopath, but it's not the way the rest of the world's going to see it.
And there's a video.
So this is where it really gets violent, creepy, and scary. Kristen Chenoweth engages as a decoy, right? She gets into Jennifer Lopez's car, and she sort of starts driving, pretending to be Jennifer Lopez, in order to lure Noah away from school so that Jennifer Lopez can sneak into Noah's house and try to find the video files and destroy them. Now, conveniently, those files are not that hard to find.
No, they're on his desktop, and they're marked Claire Video.
Yes, he's not just listed things that say Claire Video, but also things that say things like 2006 minivan brake diagram .jpg, because his automotive skills have also been employed to sabotage not one, but a few different people's cars.
Yeah, and presumably he would have moved that off the desktop since, you know, committing the act, because it was otherwise quite tidy. I have to regularly clean up my desktop, and I'm not a psychopathic killer.
So while this is all going on, he's previously, like, tampered with the brakes of John Corbett's car, so John and Twinkie Kevin, like, nearly die in a high-speed car situation on a windy road, but thankfully they're saved, and now J-Lo thinks, okay, he's not just a stalker, he's also a horrible killer. And then she puts two and two together. She remembers that Noah's parents also died in a mysterious car accident. So to corroborate this, using police work that would put, you know, Michael Douglas in Basic Instinct to shame, she goes all the way to San Bernardino, and what does she find?
She finds, one, the cop who dealt with the case immediately, and two, the burned-out minivan, presumably from a few years ago.
They've saved the car that they died in, and this, like, random high school teacher from a neighboring town shows up and just asks a lot of questions of the cop, and they're like, oh yeah, let me explain the entire case. Yeah, those people died in a car accident, and here is the burnt out husk of the car. We never could figure out what was going on. You don't know anything about the case, do you? Oh no, I was just interested in it. Okay, nice to meet you. Have a safe trip back from San Bernardino.
So, like, she does all this in the space of one afternoon as well.
While she's doing all this, however, we are now ratcheting up to the climax, which sadly Kristen Chenoweth does not survive.
Yeah, so basically he goes to Kristen Chenoweth's house, where he then ties her up and murders her.
Not before somehow extracting a message from her that sort of lures Jennifer Lopez to Kristen Chenoweth's house, right?
In which she sounds perfectly calm.
Yeah, somehow he gets her voice onto a voicemail, and Jennifer Lopez shows up at Kristen Chenoweth's house, very inconveniently discovers Kristen's mutilated body, which is pretty gruesome.
Oh, pretty gruesome,
and
yeah.
Then discovers that evil psychopathic Noah has also lured husband John Corbett and Twinkie son Kevin and tied them up in a barn. Can you explain, Sean, the kind of complicated and grisly denouement? It makes Homer seem, you know, like a nursery rhyme, yeah, by comparison.
Kevin is tied up at one end. John Corbett is tied up at the other. Claire comes in. Noah says that I'm only going to be with you. Doesn't he say that, like, Kevin can be, like, our son or something at one point?
I don't know exactly what he says, but he definitely wants to kill husband John Corbett, and it has something weird psychological to do with the fact that his own father
played away
cheated
from home
on his mother, and he ended up killing the father, and now he's going to kill John Corbett. But he basically makes an ultimatum to Claire, and he says, you live with me or you die with them. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And so he's
going to... Which is why I say at the end of every date I go on.
So he's going to kill them in some terrible way. She starts fighting back, but of course he's overpowering her. Also, how is he dressed in this scene?
Yeah, he's dressed like he's stepped out of a window of J. Crew.
Yeah, in this, like, quite fitted...
Kind of like Breton stripes.
Yeah, jumper, but also with this kind of amazing harness.
Oh yeah, so but that is for the gun he has, but yeah, it just adds to the sexy element as
mm-hmm.
well. Yeah.
So then he starts dousing the entire barn in gasoline and lighting it on fire, presumably to incinerate John Corbett and Kevin. So while J-Lo is trying to struggle with Noah, John Corbett unleashes himself from the ropes that have been tying him up, and he starts to fight back. Noah shoots John Corbett, right?
Not enough to kill him, though.
No, certainly not enough to kill him, even though he's a marvelous shot, but he doesn't quite do that. And this leaves J-Lo to give the most horrible form of vengeance possible.
Yeah, which is actually quite, you know, it's classical, really.
Well, yeah.
It's Homeric.
It's certainly Sophoclean.
Yes, yeah. Sophoclean, for sure.
It's been well set up because all of that discussion of the allergy and the EpiPen means that she's got her EpiPen with her just in case Twinkie son needs it. And where does she stick that motherfucker?
She sticks it right up his sphincter.
No, she does
oh,
not.
Oh, no, excuse
it's
me.
His eye.
Is she? Oh, yeah, that's right. She sticks it right into his eye. Okay.
Noah's eye.
She sticks it into Noah's eye, just in case we're not clear.
Blinding him.
And that is pretty unpleasant, okay? And I recoiled at that. But wait, it gets worse, okay? They struggle around a bit more. The barn is now on fire. Things are falling down. Everyone is close to death, okay? He's struggling around with, you know, an injured eye. And then she sticks her finger into the socket. And I screamed.
I've never heard you scream like this in a film, Sean.
Really?
When Aristotle describes catharsis in the Poetics, I think he had this film in mind. Claire Peterson, as a classic scholar, surely her own life story conformed to that very form of, this is the ultimate in dramatic climax, and your scream was evidence of its effectiveness.
Primal scream.
She squeezes out his eye.
It's because of the squishiness that made me scream.
Yeah.
But I actually properly screamed.
Each of the family members gets in a bit of a whack or a hit or some form of aggression towards Noah, because of course, while he has been going against the husband, really what he wants to destroy is the family bond, you know?
Yeah, he's a typical homosexual type.
Ultimately, he dies because there's been a convenient piece of heavy farm equipment or something hanging just above him on a chain, which J-Lo conveniently unhitches, and it lands with a thud, killing him instantly, while the battered family unit escapes from the burning barn into an ambulance, which, I don't know, who called the ambulance? Not Kristen Chenoweth, she was dead.
You know what, Brian? Doesn't matter.
Maybe it was that cop from San Bernardino. Anyway.
Maybe she'd pre-booked it.
There's a convenient waiting ambulance. They get inside. There's a bit of mumbling from the paramedics, which is just enough to convince us that John Corbett is not going to die, because they say, it's okay, he'll be fine. And the last line is, we're going home.
So the family is reunited. Evil is dead. They're going to make love tonight, and she will fall pregnant one
more time.
They're
not going to make love. He's going to be in intensive care.
No. She will fall pregnant tonight.
And it will be with a wholesomely conceived second child.
Yep, and the family will never fight again.
Now, Sean, obviously we had a lot of fun watching this movie, and I would recommend all of our listeners to rush out and see it for a fun afternoon of trash. Does The Boy Next Door teach us any wider lessons about cinema, American society, gender politics?
It teaches us that Jennifer Lopez is an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And that she, when she believes in something, will follow it all the way from beginning to end. And this film was a massive hit because, like you said about the January audience, but it also had a huge proportion of Latin American people going to see it. It also had a huge proportion of women of all ages going to see it. Noah, even though he's called Noah, whatever, he's also a Latin actor. And it was just wonderful to have these two Latin people leading a film, even if it was deeply reprehensible trash.
Well, and also, I feel bad for poor Noah. What was his real name?
I don't know.
Somebody Guzman.
Maybe.
Yeah?
Mr. Guzman.
He's very hunky. He's very sexy. He should have been the love interest in some sort of, rom-com romance. But sadly, while this may have been his big break, I think playing an evil psychopath is probably going to be the be-all and end-all of his career. I have to say, it's a real journey for Jennifer Lopez from Selena and Out of Sight all the way to this endpoint. This film is basically her last major movie role, and that was going on 3 years ago.
Yeah, there was that one she made with Viola Davis around the same time.
I think that was straight to video.
Oh, was it? Okay,
yeah. What is Jennifer Lopez's next stage? She proved with this she could make a film that was sort of critic-proof, mm-hmm. This film is laughable. At one point, Noah comes and delivers her a, quote, first edition of Homer's Iliad.
Yeah, 3,000-year-old text.
Oh, hey, Noah. Come on in. Kevin already left.
Actually, I pick something up for you.
Oh, my God. This is a first edition? I can't accept this. This must have cost a fortune.
It was a buck at a garage sale.
I think he found it next to the Dead Sea Scrolls.
It contains all these laughable elements. It is a script that might have just ended up in any studio's slush pile, and somehow J-Lo bestowed it with the magical touch. Yeah. So I kind of wonder, what else can she do with her powers of stardom?
She's been releasing music. We didn't talk about, actually. At the point where she decided to stop being an indie person and go straight for commercial, at a similar point in her music career, she went away from being a kind of an R&B type to dabbling in Europop.
Mm.
On the floor, we're working with people like Red One and Pitbull. She became a Euroclub floor filler.
I've just had a vision. Madonna and J-Lo in a film.
No.
Why not?
Because it will never work.
J-Lo and Lola Ciccone as her daughter.
I think Madonna would be okay with that. I just can't see Madonna and J-Lo in a movie together. No way. Because J-Lo also is kind of demanding. It's a big monster in love. She can be demanding, but not as demanding as Madonna.
Okay.
I think Lola Ciccone will be in more art house fare.
Mm.
We've established that Jennifer Lopez had the opportunity to be the pinup girl of the indie movie scene, or the pinup girl for the canny auteurist. But she's not that. And she's not, a small independent record label type either. This is not a read, and it's not me trying to be, disparaging of her career. But she has gone for maximum appeal with maximum cash. And that's fine. This is the one thing I have to say as well, actually. Is that I think she's dedicated to Latin American audiences, as well as recording in the Spanish language. And visibly proud of her Latin heritage. I often say, whenever she shows up in an awards ceremony, she's wearing that Latin dress, Cut down the front, flows out the side, very, very light, She's proud.
Mm-hmm.
She's proud of it, and she knows what to do, and it sells, okay? I can see her cherry-picking projects, like The Boy Next Door, and seeing them from conception to birth.
Now, if we want to talk about box office megastars who frequently appear on award shows and everyone loves across the board, there's only one other person that comes to mind, and she's the next actress that we will be covering in 2 weeks' time. She is
Wait, I'm trying to guess who it is. Is she old? Yes, okay, good. I know who she is.
If you thought that J-Lo was exotic, then this lady is the best exotic Marigold version. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be looking at the good, the bad, and the crazy of Judi Dench.
Yes, I'm very excited. I think I'm excited, but I'm doing it anyway. I probably chose it.
Come on, Sean, she's a national treasure.
Yeah, can I just say something? We're in the UK, so I will allow you to say Dame Judi Dench, but I'm going to allow you to do it twice per episode, okay?
I didn't say it.
All right, she's just Judi Dench.
I didn't use the word.
Okay,
I'm
just preparing
you. You saw me hesitate.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll get into this debate in 2 weeks' time, where we will be talking about that twinkly elfin septuagenarian who is likely to get yet another Oscar nomination this year. Join us. Until that time, you can follow us at Broad Appeal Pod on Twitter. I'm at B.A. Mullen Speaks.
I'm at Sean McGovern X.
And please, if you haven't already done so, when this episode ends, just scroll down a little bit on your Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating or review. Tell a friend. Get us some new subscribers. We'd love it.
Yeah, I'm going to do it right now.
Do it, Sean.
Yeah, about fucking time.
All right. There is nothing like a dame, and we'll be back with one in 2 weeks' time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.